Hi, I'm David Liggett with Data Center Hawk. I am really excited to share with you our new content series called Big Topics, where we're focusing on the most influential things impacting the data center space today. And the first one that we are covering is site selection. And we brought in an expert to cover this topic, Brant Burnett, who is Senior Vice President with CBRE's Data Center Solutions Group. We talk all about site selection, how it's changed over the many years, and some of the challenges that are taking place today as IT infrastructure demand has changed over the last many years. And please listen to the end because I highlight some of Brant's greatest qualities. He's a great musician, he's a great cook, and he needs to start a blog. He's a great writer. I've been trying to get him to do this for years, and so I hope you will encourage him to do the same. Again, this is our Big Topics content series. We cover site selection. I hope you enjoy it.
To find the right space for McDonald's is really important. To find the right space for an industrial facility that needs ingress, egress is really important. Or an office building to be situated on the right highway. Nothing, and I'm biased, I understand, nothing compares to the site selection process for data centers.
You're listening to the Data Center Hawk podcast, where we demystify the data center market. Data Center Hawk is your online platform for data and commentary on the data center market. Stay tuned and be sure to join the thousands of others who rely on Data Center Hawk to make decisions in the data center space.
Well, thank you for joining us. I am joined in Dallas with a legend in the data center real estate space. CBRE's Data Center Solutions Group Senior Vice President Brant Burnett is here. Brant, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, David.
I am excited, not only from a data center perspective, but also from a personal perspective. We had a great run together. I got to work with Brant when I worked at CBRE, and so I learned a lot from him. And just as much as I love his expertise on the data center space, I even love him more as a person, and I know a lot of people out there in our space do too. So,
thank you. For that.
You bet. Thanks for being here. We are talking. So this is really fun because we are starting a new content series at Data Center Hawk about big topics in the data center space. And so we are starting with site selection. So we brought in
good place to start.
That's right. So we have brought in an expert in that. And Brant, you've been in the data center industry for a long time, came through it from the real estate side of things, or got into the business from the real estate side of things. But before we start, give everybody just an update on how you ended up here and your career within the data center industry.
Sure, and thanks for having me. This is fun. Good to be with you, David. So in 1986,
yes,
seems like a long time ago, I was at SMU and I got in the real estate business, graduated in 87, and by 1992, I was working with a company called the Amon Group, John mm-hmm. Amon, who you know, and I fell into a transaction that was in downtown Dallas. It was about a 10,000 square foot deal with a telco company called ATC.
Okay.
That ended up becoming WorldCom and Verizon after lots of mergers. And it was a fairly complicated deal, and it was interesting because of that.
Yeah.
And lots of moving parts, and there wasn't a lot of competition for that specialty, and so mm-hmm. it kind of stuck, and I did a bunch more deals with them and others that were in that industry. Fast forward to 1998, and I went to work for Trammell Crow Company,
sure.
which was a great experience. We continued to do a bunch of telco work and started to dabble in data center. The yep. telco and data center business are very synonymous.
Sure.
There's a lot of bits and pieces that that fall into each category.
Yeah.
And in 2006, mm-hmm. I left with a good friend of mine, Martin Peck, to uh-huh. start Rackhouse. And it was a great experience. And we were doing tenant rep work and some building sales uh-huh. all in the data center industry. And it was a booming time.
Yeah.
There was lots of competition that started in Dallas. Again, fast forward to 2010, we sold our company or merged mm-hmm. with Lincoln, and that entity became Lincoln Rackhouse. And It was a great place, but I got a call from another good friend of mine, Blair Oden, who asked if I would come help out with the data center business at CBRE.
Yep.
And in 2011, I came back to Trammell Crow, which was now CBRE, yep. Got to be back with a bunch of friends and meet new guys like you,
yep.
Which is when you and I got together. And I've been there now, which is crazy, for 11 years. Hmm. And we've done a lot of really interesting site selection pieces all over the world. Mm-hmm. And here we are. It's great. And I think one thing that I would say about it is we've been through a lot.
Yeah.
That first deal in 92 was 30 years ago, which makes me feel really old. But we've got 30 plus years left in this tank, in the data center industry, and it's morphing and changing, but it's really an exciting time to be in the business.
Yeah, I always think about when I got into this space, it was like 07. And so if people listening to this, it's kind of when wholesale colocation sort of started taking shape. And I've always said, I really felt like I was on like a front row seat to a different part of the industry and how young it was. And I think about like the telco deals that you were doing, your team was working on, and just the iterations of challenges this industry has had to figure out how to solve from a real estate perspective. And so all that to say, I think it's really fun for me to talk to people who, you know, now I'm like, well, gosh, I've been in this for like 15 years, and it's fun for me to interact and get to share stories and hear stories from people that have been doing it for, you know, longer.
Well, and it's interesting because you mentioned 2007. In 2008, Rackhouse was jamming and doing a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And we represented at the time Cyrus One.
Uh-huh.
And we brought Cyrus One from Houston to Dallas in 2008.
Yeah.
In 2008, which was, 13 years ago, was really the first competitor to the other big REIT digital in Dallas. And so to think of Dallas as being really only a 13-year-old market,
I know,
which is so young
in
relation to real estate just generally is really cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. So part of where your focus has been over, you know, the last many years has been on this site selection piece. And when we were talking before, you know, when I mentioned that 2007 time period when wholesale colocation really started, you know, the end users themselves are, you know, typically would utilize colocation instead of building and owning and operating their own data centers. That's a trend we've seen kind of take place. And so I wouldn't say there was less value put on site selection. We're just doing it less. Over the last, I would say, 5 years, the market has changed significantly. There's been issues with supply chain. There's been a lot bigger demand from different users, and the enterprise sector is very active. And so, in my opinion, one of the reasons I want to start with this big topic of site selection is it's become much more important. A lot of people believe that there's just land and you can build data centers wherever, you know, and if you have enough money and enough time, maybe you can, but that is not what we have seen. You know, it's really that in each of these markets, there's fewer land sites, fewer places to build. And there's a number of considerations that go on when companies are thinking about this stuff. And so that's what I want to pick your brain about. You're doing this every day. You're talking to people. So from your perspective, give a background on how it's changed, you know, from those days when you were working with companies, maybe early 2000s to today, what are some of the techniques that have changed, or just from your standpoint, how has that process adjusted over the last 20 years?
Yeah, so great. A lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
I would say the data center site selection industry in particular, there's lots of nuances to that, right? It's go find me a piece of land somewhere.
Yep.
Or it's help me find co-location space, or it's some sort of hybrid of the two. And frankly, some of that is we've got a building that we need to sell, so there's a lot of potential clients in that space. But when I step back and look at the way the data center industry works and why it's so important, if you look at just the big picture of site selection generally in the real estate business for as long as there's been a real estate business, to find the right space for for McDonald's is really important. To find the right space for an industrial facility that needs ingress, egress is really important. Mm-hmm. Or an office building to be situated on the right highway. Nothing, and I'm biased, I understand, nothing compares to the site selection process for data centers. Mm-hmm. It's really expensive, first of all. High level, if you go build a data center core and shell, it's $250 a square foot. To turn that core and shell with the power into something that is a data center can be another $1,000 a square foot. Then you've got this beautiful data center, but you've got to rack and stack it. You've got to bring the CPUs in, and that can be another $2,000 a square foot. And then we've heard of companies, once all that's done, to bring in the software can be another $5,000 a square foot. So you get this huge cost outlay that you can't make. You can't make a mistake.
Yeah, and so compare that to, if you think about, for those that are listening, the traditional office, industrial, retail, you know, that is much higher than those asset classes would be investing into a
by location. 10 times.
There you go. Yeah.
And by 10 times. And so you
so it's an expensive mistake to make if you do make
that's exactly right. So you've got to, that's right. I mean, you know, we say all the time, if you do it right, you did your job.
Yeah.
If you do it wrong, you probably have lost your job.
Sure.
And you are persona non grata in the field.
Yeah.
So data centers, and I think your question to take that further is where has it gone? Where has it come? One of the things that I think is really interesting, and you and I have talked about this before, and I love the topic. I love the topic, especially with young guys, which used to be you. But
yeah, it's not. I got a little gray hair going on here. That's changed a bit.
But young guys in the industry that are interested in how we used to do what we did, and not even in 2000, but even before that. And one of the interesting pieces of it is the toolbox that we carry around with us. And again, you and I have talked about this. Yeah. You get a back then we would take a map everywhere we went. We'd get on an airplane, first of all. We'd take a map everywhere we went. And I got really good at folding maps. You know, there's an art to folding a map. And then we had MapsGo, and then we had flashlights, and then we had tape measures, and we had cell phones, but they were big, bulky cell phones that didn't always work. And we had computers, and we had all that literally in its own bag.
Mm-hmm.
And every bit of that we can do on this.
Yep.
From the flashlight to the measuring devices to the cell phone to the GPS, everything that we needed back then that was so bulky and cumbersome has become fairly streamlined,
kind of like
the rest of the business.
Yeah, you guys have there was a story that, you know, maybe it's you telling me, or maybe it was we worked with another team member at CBRE at the time, Chris Herman, about kind of tracking fiber by one like pothole or one kind of fiber location to the next.
There were three things that we looked for.
Okay, there we go.
One was the orange flag that was a little bitty orange flag that had the name of the company on it.
Okay.
And it might have said AT&T or whoever the company was that was running their fiber.
Yep.
And you would follow that, and then you'd see the orange spray paint.
Yeah, sure.
And that orange spray paint that ruined so many sidewalks in downtown, including really expensive sidewalks in downtown.
That's funny.
That was the second. And then the third piece was the pole, the white pole that had the little orange piece on it. And like Chris said, it was shoe leather. You would get out and you would go from, one pole to the next, and you'd map that on the map, and then you go to the next, and then you'd find out where the handhole was, and you'd go find out, you know, whose fiber that was.
Sure.
And a lot of times there was the big concrete manhole that had a stamp on it that would tell you who it was. Like, now I know whose fiber is here, and we'd do that. It was so laborious. It was just tons of labor that went into it in shoe leather. And now, you know, there's a company, NEF, or Fiber Locator, in Boston, and CBRE bought that company a couple years ago. Mike Murphy and his team there have built a product that is just, it's unbelievable, and it takes so much less time. I mean, like orders of magnitude, much less time to put an address in and instantly populate where all the fiber
is
and whose fiber it is and what buildings are lit.
Sure,
and,
totally different.
And what are not.
With that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, okay, so let's, when you think about, let's talk site selection on the land side of things today. And I want to just kind of, you know, from your standpoint, who are the groups and just business groups, not necessarily individual names, of companies that are, you know, really moving things forward in the land development and the site selection side of things. And then two, what's driving that? Like just business requirements and that kind of stuff, just at a high level. And then I want to get into some of the specifics around power. I want to get into some of the specifics around site size, setbacks, some of the things that have changed specifically with that. But just from a high level, what are the company types that are driving this demand and then why is it happening?
Yeah, so you brought up earlier a good point that there the enterprise data center buyer to go buy land and build.
Yeah.
We don't see as much of that anymore. And I think historically, as you look at what those companies have done, more often than not, a piece of land is found, a building is built, 10 megawatts, just to use a number, has been built out.
Sure.
3 megawatts is being used, and they're trying to figure out, what do I do with the rest? How do I monetize the rest of this?
Right. Because they've overbuilt, or
they've overbuilt, and what they said was, and rightfully so, IT departments were really smart in doing this, but the world changed, and IT departments were saying, "Look, we're using 3 megawatts today, and we've been on a pretty consistent growth pattern. So of course we're going to use 6 in 3 years, and then we're going to use 9 or 10 in 5 years, and so we're building for 15 or 20 years." So we're going to do that. It didn't really turn out that way because what happened, there are two things that happened, and there's a lot more, but the two that I always like to point to are, one, co-location providers became more reliable.
Yeah, sure.
They became a solution that was not scary, even to the banks, even to the financial services companies, because a lot of times, you know, they were worried that they were not built as resilient as what they would build, but we're finding uptime in those facilities, those co-location facilities, because they have so much riding on the line, is higher than what we're seeing in especially the older, the legacy enterprise data centers. And so you've got fewer companies going out and building that type of thing. Where we're really seeing the growth is in the colo providers.
Yep. So those groups, as they're like expanding their footprint in maybe markets they're already in, or to get more, you know, sites across the country, even from a global perspective, right? That's some of that growth.
Totally.
Multi-tenant
market. And global, that you nailed it. Globally is, you know, a lot of companies whose names you know here are starting to go you know, across the world.
Yeah, and you got to. Yeah.
Really interesting markets. Singapore is one of the hottest markets in the world right now. And so we're seeing a lot of that growth. We're seeing a lot of the hyperscalers growth.
Sure.
And those companies are taking down, I mean, David, they're taking down 200 megawatt type sites.
Yeah.
Go find me 100 acres or 200 acres or 300 acres. So that's a huge growth piece of
this. So compare that to 10 years ago. What were people asking for 10 years ago? You know, you just said 100 acres and 200 megawatts, which I think now is actually probably pretty common with some of the deals that are getting done. But 10 years ago,
it was a fraction of that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was going to say 10%, and that's probably not right. Yeah. But, you know, when we would go look for sites, we'd look for 20-acre sites.
Sure.
You remember doing that.
Oh, yeah.
We'd look for 20-acre sites, and we did it for bigger ones when the need arose. But 10-acre sites, and to think that you would ever need 20 megawatts.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, you're going to use, you need power for 20 megawatts.
Yeah.
And now it's like, that doesn't.
Yeah, it's day one.
It doesn't even, that doesn't faze anybody. And then the third piece that we don't have to spell, or maybe fourth, is the crypto guys.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of driving when China stopped allowing cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of that growth moved to the United States.
Interesting.
We've got really inexpensive power. I mean, power that's, you know, sub 4 cents and in some places sub 3 cents.
Yeah.
And so it makes a ton of sense for those guys. It's a little bit of a different world because there's typically not a big credit behind those companies, but they're gigantic users. Yeah, I mean, to the extent that they want 500, a pathway to 500 megawatts. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you about this. With 200 acres, acquiring 200 acres can only be done in certain places because, you know, as you're in a city or as you're in a more populated area, just sites like that size don't exist. So typically they're pushed out. So, and on top of that, we've seen, you know, the data center universe have to compete with other real estate asset classes like the industrial.
Totally.
So if you think about the pandemic, the two shining stars of the, you know, commercial real estate industry were the industrial world and the data center world.
For sure.
And, you know, I think that industrial probably developers make decisions maybe faster because there's, you know, the data center operators are investing more money. There's a longer term probably investment in these sites. So it's harder to make decisions. But that land has been taken by a lot of industrial uses. So talk about, just for those that don't know, you know, you're in the market every day. You're seeing these sites. How hard is it now to get land in these markets? Chicago, Dallas, Phoenix, Northern Virginia, Atlanta, Portland.
Well, it's a great question. And we laugh about the fact that if we keep on this pace, we're going to run out of land.
Yeah.
I mean, literally run out of land and maybe run out of the ability to make enough power to power everything.
Yeah.
And you think about, like, Northern Virginia is a great example.
Yep.
I mean, Northern Virginia's data center corridor is about the epicenter is about 3.5 miles apart from one side from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas is about 33 miles.
Yeah.
It's a massive area.
Yep.
And yet it's really difficult to find good data center space in Dallas that is, you know, anything bigger than 50 acres.
Yeah, and I think these challenges are pushing the development to areas that traditionally it has not been. So in Dallas, it's pushing it to the south. In you know, Chicago, it's pushing it to the west. In Phoenix, it's pushing it both to the east and the west, if you think of Mesa and Goodyear. So these are real estate challenges. You know, it's obviously the power, the connectivity to the site, but that is where a site is located, and can you get the site to be big enough to accommodate? You said you used the word pathway, and I think that is so important today, is that your customers and people that you're working with expect a pathway to a significant amount of power and to build physical buildings on sites that need to be able to hold 4 buildings, 5 buildings, et cetera.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you look at any of those markets that you mentioned, and you even look at South Dallas, the dilemma is you can find land, but in any of those markets that are tertiary outliers from a big market, you can find the land, but then you've got to get the infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to bring roads. You've got to bring power. You got to bring fiber. You've got to do. You got to get sewer in there. You got to do water. All those things, and can it be done? Absolutely, because real estate can.
Sure.
Those things can happen.
Solve those problems.
You can solve those problems. It's a timing issue.
Yeah.
And with the supply chain issues that we're seeing now and with the cost of construction and just the manufacturing of steel products and all of that, cost is going up.
Yeah.
Time is going up. And, you know, if you look at just a build for power, how do we bring 100 megawatts to this power, to this piece of land? Well, we've got to build a substation, right? We build a substation. And what used to take, let's just call it a year, that's taken 2 years now.
Yeah.
And it's maybe 150% of what it used to cost.
Yeah.
And maybe even more because of the supply chain issues. And I do think we'll get out of that. I think we'll figure out a way out of the supply chain problems. But the world has changed.
Yeah.
The way things are delivered has changed. I mean, I can look out your window right now and see Prime driving by, you know, delivering stuff. And it's just, it is a really interesting shift that we're all having to deal with. And I don't think double the critical path and time and a half or double the cost is going to last.
Yeah.
It's not going to be there forever, but we're definitely going to have a shift that ratchets that
yeah,
up.
We're in that world now. So you deal with land cost. You know, that's obviously something that your team analyzes. You understand the dynamics behind that. You know, 10 years ago, if, you know, tracking this market in the U.S., most big companies, if they were going to build, own, and operate their own data center, would be in rural markets where land was relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
Probably 5 to 7 years ago, a lot of that demand came back towards bigger cities or, you know, areas that had more population. And typically the land in those areas is going to be more expensive. So then throw the perfect storm of all the things you just mentioned, and land prices have increased dramatically. Just talk about that and how that's even shifting some of the change and where people might want to go.
Yeah, so I do think the tier two markets and tertiary markets, generally speaking, mm-hmm. are going to, and there's other reasons for that.
Yep.
There's just the expansion of multiple reasons mm-hmm. why tertiary markets are going to need to come into play in the future. But tertiary areas within those major markets, like yep. we were talking about, we're going to have to utilize those.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, you look at Dallas, there's no infill sites yeah. in Dallas. You go out west and you've got way too many oil and gas lines and rigs that mm-hmm. you've got to contend with. You go east and you just don't have the fiber story that you need. So you got to go somewhere and you go south. And I think that from, I think we will continue to see that. I mean, you mentioned price, and there are certain places in the country that we had a complete stranglehold on, knew everything about the pricing of those land sites that 10 years ago were 25%
yeah.
of what they are today.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, literally,
yeah.
they've quadrupled.
Yeah.
And most of those have quadrupled since the pandemic, as hard
yeah.
as that is to believe, because we are competing so much yeah. with the logistics guys.
Yep.
The industrial guys, the logistics guys, we all need the same type of space. We all need a lot of it. Most of us need a lot of power. Fiber's not so important to them as it is to us, but it's a really tricky time, and you get interesting markets like Salt Lake City that is built in a valley, and mm-hmm. there's only so much land there.
Yeah.
And it becomes, just a really interesting market if you're a holder of land, if
sure.
you own land.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to find land, as we have tried to do for clients, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
We used to say that the land cost was a rounding error of the total cost
right.
that goes in, which, you know, if you, generally speaking, those that are listening in this space, you know, they'd go, well, you mentioned it earlier. It's all the equipment that goes on to the end of the data center and the hardware and all that stuff. That's where the main cost is. But, you know, so the land cost is a smaller piece of that. But over the last several years, that piece has gotten a lot bigger than it was. And that has come, you know, if you think about the financial modeling of some of these deals and the yields that a lot of these data center operators and people like that are looking to get, that does impact, you know, those numbers.
It is really hard for a real estate guy to say the cost of real estate doesn't matter.
Sure.
Because it just
yeah.
literally, you it's ingrained in you if
yeah.
you've been doing it for any amount of time. The real estate cost, it does matter.
Sure.
But to your point, if you look at the total cost model,
yep.
the cost of land has gone up,
yeah.
but the cost of build's gone up too.
Sure.
So if you
yeah.
look at the pie and what little slice of the pie that land piece is,
yep.
it's probably still in that same neighborhood.
Yep.
And but if you just look at it and you're very myopic about
sure.
looking at just the land price and you say, well, that was $4 last September and now
yep.
it's 14, it impacts your
yeah.
thinking.
Yep.
And and those companies that have been in these markets for a long time looking for something, couldn't
yeah.
pull the trigger or something else changed, they look, wait a minute, you're telling me that land that we were looking at
sure.
2 years ago
yeah.
is now at $14 or whatever the number
yeah.
is? And it's just a really interesting time.
It's a hard pill to swallow for
it
a
is.
Number of those.
And it is for me.
Sure.
It is
yeah.
for me looking
yeah.
at that and going, this can't be right.
Well, yeah.
I know this land.
Yeah, and I think it's pushed the data center operator community to have to move faster. And, you know, it only takes a few of those misses. I mean, I think there have been literal probably deals that you can look back on that companies have just missed because they didn't buy the land, they didn't do the power procurement and the work that you have to get done to be in a position to, when that deal comes, to have the pathway to solve that problem.
Land banking.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting a lot of companies that are going out and saying, we've got to get to South Dallas.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going to happen there quite yet.
Yep.
But we got to get to South Dallas, and we got to compete with these logistics guys and all the other competitors that are trying to get down.
Yeah. There. It's now the, you know, we talk about the powered shell development. I think it's now the powered site development.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you can say, hey, I've got five powered sites across the U.S. or in Europe or APAC, those are different markets, different stories, but that's a really compelling message to have today in the market. So I want to talk about risk for a second.
Yeah.
So, to your point, when companies are spending $500 million, $1 billion over a 20-year period, where they spend that money is very important. There's a risk assessment that gets done on all these sites that your team and others will go about and do. So that is a very important part of the process. But that's also very like objective.
Yeah.
There's also some subjectivity that comes into this, which is because if you look at Northern Virginia, you mentioned that 3.5 mile section in Northern Virginia, you know, planes fly over it quite frequently just because there's an airport right at the base of it. So talk about just that tension, you know, of, hey, we need to do all this risk assessment to make sure this site makes sense, but we need a data center site to be ready in 18 months. And these are the only two spots that can happen.
You're spot on again. That is the rub. That's the play that you got to go back and forth on. And your insight to airports is really interesting, because if you look at Chicago,
yeah,
if you look at Northern Virginia, even here in Dallas, certainly in Silicon Valley, they're all built. Data centers are built right next to airports.
Yep.
And right at the end, in some cases, of active runways, sure, as we used to say.
Yeah.
And the reality is that there's not been, you know, knock on wood, obviously, any airplane crashing into a data center, thankfully. But things change. We were working with a client, financial institution.
Yep.
And they looked at a bunch of different sites. We looked at some hazard risks in some places, but where we ended up, not to get specific, but where we ended up, it scored a 10 out of 10 for fiber. Hmm. And so they were able to say, there's some of these other things that we're willing to forego, mm-hmm, because the fiber is so rich here, and that's really what we need,
yeah,
to solve for.
Yes.
And so it's a give and take.
Yep.
It's a give and take. And, you know, if you think just about the risk profile, and you and I have, mm-hmm, had this conversation hundreds of times, TIA 942, the old 1996 telecom standards.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't be too close to this road. Yeah. Can't be, you know, this far from a dam. Can't be close to a railroad.
Yeah.
Every one of those, and all of us who do this, you'll write a risk profile, and you'll say, hey, here are the things that we think you should be concerned about. And the answer most of the time is, we agree, all the way down until we don't agree.
Sure.
And when we don't agree, it's because there's something else that's trumping that little piece.
Yep.
And we've run it through our risk assessment internally,
yep,
and we feel like that's not a big enough issue for us to kill the deal.
Yeah.
Over.
No, I have a funny story alert. I had somebody ask me, you know, look at Dallas and basically, hey, we want to be at a spot where, you know, it's outside of 5 miles from any like large or medium sized airport. And so, okay. So we basically draw these 5 mile radius circles around Dallas, and we're like, there's nothing left.
You can't go anywhere.
Sorry. Like, yeah. You're not going to Dallas, because that's the case. Like, okay, well, maybe 5 miles is a little
We see that a lot. And you see very restrictive covenants that get broken because there are other things. And like I said, you know, at the very beginning, the cost to build a data center is really big.
Yeah.
And it's a career changer for somebody if it goes the wrong way. And so you're really careful about it.
Yep.
You build the spreadsheet that says, here's how we're going to get there. and you follow it as closely as you can, and then you weigh those risks that you can't get around.
Yep.
And you make a decision.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I obviously have come out of the brokerage world, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, but thinking of, you know, what you all are doing in the process. I mean, the process is so important, and that's the you know, so much part of the value that you all bring is that process and the ability to go back when the questions get asked to show someone, hey, this is the process that we went through. This is the analysis that we did. This is where we ended up. We were all in agreement and building that internal consensus so that these people,
auditable.
Yeah, that have these career decisions they're making, because they're, you know, the company's going, hey, we're going to spend $1 billion and we need you three at the company to figure it out.
Right.
It's a lot of pressure. So everything you said makes a lot of sense.
In that case, and you know this because you heard it said to us multiple times, is that consensus, that group of three will come to us and we say, we don't know where we want to be.
Yep.
But you need to basically write a roadmap, sure. Show us where we need to be, and then tell us each of the steps along the way that tell us why we need to be.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And again, we may trump it for whatever reason, but
sure.
Having a good auditable roadmap is important.
When you so let's crystal ball here for a second. Over the next several years, there's a number of impacts that are happening right now in our space: larger demand, supply chain issues, globalization of our business. Where do you think this site selection world will be in the next 5 years? I mean, what do you think it looks like to do this 5 years from now?
Yeah, first of all, I think 5 years is the blink of an eye.
Yep.
But again, you go back to what I said earlier, 13 years, you know, competitive nature in Dallas. So things are moving at light speed. I think there's a few things trends that we're seeing. Number one, you know, from a power perspective, having multiple opportunities for renewable power. For a long time, that was a nice to have, but I'm not going to pay for it. And so it's not a need to have. We're starting to see that change because the price of water and sun and wind are coming down. So we're starting to see that mix change a little bit. As we squeeze the size of spaces that we can buy, we're starting to see, you saw the InfoMart built four stories over off of Stemmons, and we're starting to see multi-story data centers grow out of Greenfield just because of the constraint of space. Mm-hmm. And I also think that what we're going to start to see, and we've heard this on many calls in just the last 6 months, is we're going to start to see those tertiary markets really start to take on some of the burden of the growth.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
and I think it's a lot of reasons. Tertiary markets need the service, just like anybody else does. These things tend to cluster.
Yep.
As you can see, if you look at a map, it's very obvious that they cluster. They don't cluster in tertiary or tier two or tier three markets. You might have a little outlier.
Yep.
I think that's going to start happening as, you know, autonomous cars, just to use one example, need a lot of compute, and they need it in a lot of different places. Yeah. And I think we'll start to see that as that technology and others continue to grow and become more mainstream, data centers are going to start popping up in places you never thought you'd see.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Okay, so I want to switch from business data center world real quick and ask you three things. One, I want to make sure people know this. Brant is a very talented musician. His family is very talented from music perspective. So what's your instrument of choice? Is it guitar? Is that what you're doing mainly? I mean, I know you can
Yeah, and things. Thanks for the plug. I don't have any records that you can go by, but I do love to play. I come from a very musical family. My dad is a musician. Uh-huh. My mother-in-law was a musician, and I've got kids. Five Islands is the name of their band.
Okay.
Check it out.
There we go.
You have your listeners.
There's the plug.
There's the plug. I play guitar.
Okay.
And virtually everybody in my family plays something, so we get together a lot and just have big, fun jam sessions.
Yes, one of the things I love about Brant is he will include, you know, you'll include a lot of people in that, and I think so many people – in our industry that you've included in that, but also too, just in Dallas have enjoyed that. Okay, that's one thing, the music side. So Five Islands, check it out. Number two, you are an incredible cook as well. So Brant Spence, he's like one of the most interesting man in the world type thing.
He's not.
So tell me, what is your like go-to if you're, you have somebody over to the house and you're making something, you kind of open the kitchen doors, what would you prepare?
Wow. I'm really good at smoking a pork shoulder.
Okay.
Really good at that.
Okay.
But I think my best and my favorite thing to cook is fried chicken and biscuits.
Okay.
And I'm really good at that.
Okay. There we go.
And so a little piece of chicken breast.
Yeah.
Deep fried.
Come on.
And a buttermilk biscuit.
Yeah.
And maybe a little honey or jam on top of that.
Okay.
And it seems it's one of my secret ways that I can get all my kids to come over to the house.
Yeah.
So just say, hey,
yeah,
I'm making chicken and biscuits.
Yeah.
And so we do that. I've got a few other things that I love to do, and my kids and wife make fun of me because I do have some serious go-tos. Okay, we're doing that again, Dad?
Hey, man. I would never complain about that. Okay, the last thing is this. So when we were at CB, I wanted you to start a blog. You have written before in blog format for some different publications in Dallas. So this is just another encouragement. When you're ready to start the blog, I'm ready to promote it. And if you're watching this, you can encourage him too, because Brant is a great writer.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You'll need to give me some content to work on, and then we can go from there.
Very good. Well, Brant, thanks so much for
doing this.
Great to see you. Look forward to catching up again here soon.
Sounds great. Thanks.